Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. That's Tim.
That's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to that rare gem that was in Luther and Nobody Loves an Albatross and a lot of television plays and commercials. It's the back of your video store shelf. This week, we're riding the ship. We're getting back on track. No more funny stuff.
No
more laughy laughs and fantasy films and memories from our childhood. None of that shit. We're celebrating a new miniseries. It's the month of May. We're celebrating moms. It's our miniseries, Mom May.
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point. And we're starting it off with the 1968 absolute classic Academy Award winning film, Rosemary's Baby. Tim, the devil wants to make a deal with you. What deal are you making and what's he getting in return?
Well, that's a great question. And I have
You can also say, I would not make a deal with the devil.
Oh, I'll make it. I will make it.
That's boring as shit.
I will make it. And in order to state what my answer to that is, I have to just brag enormously.
I already have a deal with the devil.
Right.
Why do you think this podcast got 12 likes on Instagram last week?
Well, we do have a mutual friend that actually had a phase where he thought I was the devil.
Oh.
Because, and I think what it was, it might have something to do with a sort of, I'm going to be humble about it, like an innate charm that's irresistible.
A devilish grin.
Or devilish grin. Albeit gap tooth, but I mean, that's part of the charm.
Yeah.
So a devilish grin, a sort of like a willingness to like, I'll join you in whatever joy you're having, but I'm always going to make my little side comments to like take myself out of it as well. And he just he thought that I was the devil. And there was a great moment where he asked me under a unusual set of chemical circumstances, where he said, he came right out and he just asked me if I was the devil. And I said, well, the funny thing is that if I was, it's not like I could tell you.
Right.
The look of like half smile, three quarters panic on his face was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And but no, I am not the devil, but I will use him.
Okay.
And here's where I
like that twist.
Here's,
you've got one up on the devil.
Oh, I do. I do. I can turn the tables on any. That's what I'm paid to do. I'm paid to turn it all around and create new realities. So here's the thing. I have had the luck, fortune, talent. But the luck, the fortune, and the go-getter attitude to achieve a lot of the things that I really enjoyed in life. And that's really like all I would ever want for anybody on this planet is to pick the one thing that they really like. Because there is a phrase that says effort equals results. In my business, there is a phrase, I say it all the time to my employees, that effort doesn't always equal results, which is also true. But at the end of the day, I feel like if somebody really pushes hard enough for a specific goal, while they may not get to be the pinnacle of that goal, they'll get to be a part of it. Okay, so like let's say somebody really wants to get into theater,
yep,
right? And they just go to their local theater and they want to be on stage. And the thing is, like, maybe you'll never get to be that top guy, but you'll get to be a part of it. And now I've gotten to be that top guy in theater.
Yeah.
Now in fighting, okay, I am not that top guy. I have
too old.
I'm too old. That, yeah. Frankly, too old. I have a really great skill set that is a great challenge for when I spar with the guys that are pursuing this professionally, and it creates a lot of problems for them. But I'm not stepping into a ring. The way that they are. But guess what? I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I'm a part of it. I'm grinding with these guys every day. I'm keeping up with 22-year-olds. I'm fighting professional fighters to prepare them for their fights. I'm not having that fight, but I'm a part of the process.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. So what I'm getting at is,
like, the equipment manager gets a Super Bowl ring too, right?
Yeah. And it's got diamonds on it.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there is a win in just a partial victory there. So what I'm saying is I feel that while not having, you know, made it big in Hollywood, I feel fulfilled with my theatrical pursuits, which was a passion. I feel fulfilled in my fighting pursuits, which is still ongoing. And I was just there tonight. And there was a particular series of moves because my specialty is kicking. And that I, like, the guy that I was working with, who's really a great fighter, was like, God, you make that look so smooth. Again, not at the pinnacle of it, but I feel a part of it. The one aspect in answer to your question that I would make a deal with the devil for is music.
Oh.
To be a guitar player in a band. And I don't even need to play like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I mean, why though? If you're going to make a deal with the devil, why sell yourself so short?
Well, that's because I don't need a lot. Like, I'm not 18. Like, I'm okay with, can I play a show? Can I play a set at a local bar? And that's why I think now there's other reasonings behind this.
Yeah.
I hopefully won't have to give up as much.
Right. It seems like a drastic thing to do for, maybe, you know, a little black background applause.
Right. But here's the thing. If I'm 18 and I sell my soul to the devil, I have to sell my soul to the devil in order to be like win a Grammy or be in, like, you know, a number one band that the whole world knows. And we travel and fly all over in our personal jet. Yeah, you'd better trade your soul for that.
Yeah,
that's a big ask. But I'm not asking that much. So I would be interested to know, what are the levels of deals?
A tiered right, deal, yeah, system?
I don't need the gold package. I don't. Give me that bronze. Right. What's the bronze got? What do I have to do? And I don't know. Maybe that thing would be like, I have to, like, I don't even know. Fix an election, or, like, you know, at, like, a high school, like, homecoming court or whatever, like, whatever it may be, like, yeah, I'll do that. I'm a good person. I deserve it. So that would be my thing.
Well, honestly, I don't think you have to do the bad thing. You just get the good thing.
Is that how it works?
Well, yeah, you get the good thing, but you have to give up something good. You then don't have to do something nefarious to get the thing.
Oh,
I mean, maybe the devil might tell you that. Why not? He's the fucking devil. He might be like, oh, no. You have to go just shoot that high school up.
Well,
and
okay.
You get a gold record.
Maybe he comes to me and he says, I'll make you your regional music star. But in order to do that, you have to know that he will suppress what would have been like a John Lennon. So that, but you know what? We've got lots of musicians out there that have influenced a lot of people.
Yeah.
So do we really need another John Lennon, for God's sake?
I mean, there was a movie called Yesterday, kind of about what if there really was no John Lennon?
Right.
I mean, he never formed the Beatles. Actually, in the movie, there is John Lennon. That's one of the things. Since no one heard of the Beatles, no one assassinates him. He lives to be an old man.
Yeah, so maybe I'm doing a public service here. I'm sure that all those groupies and all that money, like, he'd trade that to just live a normal life for 80 years.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, it would be, that is my last and final, like, when my body can no longer keep up fighting much younger men.
Yeah.
And you can do theater till you're fucking 8. I remember the first show that I ever did, there was a guy named Bud, and Bud was ancient and it showed in every regard, meaning, like, it didn't show so much if you weren't into things like line memorization or like a remembering of blocking or anything like that, or barely showing up for the performances. So Bud was just like, he was like a sort of like heartbeat piece of furniture that you just sort of shuffled around the stage. Like, Bud, just go over here now.
Right.
But he was in the play. But what I'm saying is you can do theater for a long time. You can't fight forever. And so I think that that's my next goal for myself. So yeah, a deal, a polite
to be the guy they push around on stage.
Right. Exactly. I'll be that guy.
I made it.
I'll be Bud. But the thing is, like, that is the one aspect, musical performance, and more than that, musical expression to an audience. That's something that I would be willing to make a polite and gentle devilish deal for.
Wow.
Do you have anything that you, I mean, assuming, well, this is tough for you because we have to assume that there is a devil.
Yeah, how would I know it's the devil, Tim? What kind of tests would I run?
Right.
None of that shit this week. No, if the devil were real, I don't know. I mean, it sounds tempting, but I hate getting tricked. So that's always, like, I know I'm not getting a fair deal. I don't like that.
You'd want to know the whole deal.
I can't be a good communist socialist and be like, give me a bad deal.
Right.
Just don't give me what I'm worth.
If you knew the bad deal, you could weigh that for yourself. But you don't want to be like the Cyclops in Krull, where it's like, yes, you get to see the future, but the only future you see is your own death.
Is that his thing?
Yeah.
I don't remember that detail.
Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. It might be time to watch that again.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that's, it's like the trickery of that. Yeah. And the devil is, but you know what? Don't you just fucking get tired of playing tricks on people after a while?
Well, not if you live eternally, and probably not.
Well, yeah,
probably, but it's always fun.
It may be.
Like, they keep on coming.
But doesn't he want a couple close friends? Like, guys that he doesn't fuck over so hard that he can just like.
But there might be some like, doesn't the devil have lieutenants and shit? Like, I'm sure. Azrael and
But they have to Theramon do it because that's their job. He needs a real friend that he can call up at 2 o'clock in the morning and be like, you know what? Nobody understands the burden.
Yeah,
like nobody gets
You want the South Park devil?
Is that what he's like?
Yeah,
is
he's
just sort of
like the
road weary?
Oh, guys, okay, like yeah,
yeah. I want a nice.
He succumbs to Saddam Hussein. Did you never see the movie?
I don't know if I did.
Oh man, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has a relationship with Saddam Hussein. Remember that guy?
Yeah, I do. I do. Yeah. And yeah, so that's the tricky part, because you're right. The tricky part of making a deal with the devil is that apparently it never actually goes well.
Right.
Ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be like, how do I? And I know the devil, like, you know, your usual deal with the devil, your base one is just like your soul for whatever.
Yeah.
Your eternal soul. Because we can't comprehend how long eternity is. So we're like, that's worth playing guitar for 2 decades. But yeah, you know, there's never, you know, you want to find that kind of, and this is more of a, I guess, a monkey's paw thing where it's like, oh, I wish I had $1 million. Oh, here, your grandmother's dead now, but she left you $1 million. You know, one of those things. I'm always trying to be like, what could I ask for where there is absolutely no negative repercussion? And I'm sure there are things out there, but they're never things that will benefit you that much, you know?
Maybe you say, I want to be your friend.
Wow.
I want to be your friend.
That's my deal.
And now you're his friend, so you get like the free deals. Once you've established yourself as his friend,
right,
then you don't have to trade anything for it anymore because you're his buddy. I mean, that's...
I just want to hang out because I pay for dinner all the time.
Those are the lieutenants, right? Yeah. So he doesn't give a shit about those guys. They're just in there for a paycheck. But
like, bootlickers.
Yeah.
They don't mean it.
They get to turn it down from like 600 to 500 degrees. Like, that's what those guys get. But... that's the other thing. Well, you might have a loophole altogether, because if you look at different descriptions of hell, which is, I'm assuming, where your eternal soul goes as the punishment. If you look at different versions of hell, it's not always like fire. Sometimes it's described as cold, but what it's ultimately described as is the absence of God. So you're like...
Like our schools, too?
Well, more like if it were you, you're like... like today,
right?
Like last Tuesday,
yeah.
For you, I mean, so
that's
yeah.
That's a terrible thing about hell. You might be there, and you can't even tell.
Right. Some people think I was in the a local watering hole recently, and there was a guy there that is a really cool guy, but he's extremely religious, extremely to the point where he had told me that God had come to him and said that he was now. This guy is Mexican, but God told him that he was one of the lost tribes of Israel.
Oh.
Now, I don't want to make fun of it. This guy is very impassioned about his faith, but he is convinced that where we are now in life is like modern day Babylon, and it is riddled with sin, and he can't wait to get out of here. And
wow.
he just cannot wait to get off this earthly plane so that he can go to a good place.
Right.
And to me, I'm like, man, what a waste of life. Because, like, I'm sure that maybe while you think you're impressing God with that theory, he's like, shit, dude, I made that. Like, yeah. You're just going to piss all over it? Like,
right. Yeah.
I know it's not heaven, but is it that fucking bad? I'm sorry.
You make that in a few days.
It's a 2-star hotel. I think you'll fucking survive. I mean, sorry that they promised a continental breakfast, but the lights are off and the chairs are up on the table and there is no breakfast. I'm sorry, but it's not that bad.
Some warm yogurts.
Right. Plural. Warm,
well, yeah. Yeah. Still a variety.
A series of yogurt. Yeah. But
most irrational deal would be like, I don't want to use an inhaler anymore. I'll sell my soul for that.
Okay. Look.
Like, can I not wake up in the middle of the night wheezing? That'd be cool.
The worst you can get out of that is like, he's like, all right, dude, you're going to get a flat tire in the next like 8 months. Fine. That's a fair trade.
Yeah.
You would make that deal with the devil.
Yeah.
So you would.
But the devil could then be like, cool, I'm going to eliminate all the things that you're allergic to, and he kills my cats.
No.
See, that's how the devil would do it.
You know what he would do? Oh, he'd be shitty about it. He'd be worse than that.
No, the devil would? What? Yes.
He'd say, I'm going to eliminate all inhalers for everyone.
Yeah, see, that you got to be tricky. Yes. Don't say, I don't want to hit an inhaler. It'd be like, fine. Now you can't, Wheezy. Yeah.
Here's little Jimmy over here.
Oh, God.
No, that's what he'd do.
Yeah.
But he's good at his job.
Yeah, he is good at his job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I changed my mind. I don't think I would make a deal with the devil.
Well, that's good.
I think I'm, happy enough with what I've got. I don't know. I'm done pursuing things.
Well, the real question is, and we'll talk about this later, how much of a big difference is there between what the devil asks or offers and what the flip side of that asks or offers or demands?
Great question, Tim.
We'll definitely get into
something
that.
Now or later?
Let's do that later. No, fuck yeah. It. Let's do it now. You want to do it now?
Okay.
Okay.
Are you talking about like where's the devil coming from?
Oh no. I'm gonna take you on a ride. Where are we at for this intro?
Our normal okay. Half hour.
We're going to get into it. I'm just going to get into this because this is fascinating. And some people might see this as blasphemy. Not you, but other people might. But I'm just going to throw this out there. So when we watch these movies, I have a fun little game that I play with myself. And I will drive around for a while and I'll be like, okay, let's take a step back and ask ourselves, are the things that happened in this movie all that bad?
Okay.
Which is usually a short conversation because we're talking about horror movies.
Right.
Right. But I started looking at this movie. Now, let me be clear. Unconsensual sexual relations is rape, and it is a horrible, horrible thing.
Yep.
That is the bad thing that happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Aside from devil this or that or whatever.
Right.
It's rape.
Right.
So that is unequivocally bad. Let's take that off the table for a second. If you were a part of any religion that said you have the ability to bring your God to earth Instead of being in a distant place, you have the ability to do it. All I need is a human vessel.
Yep.
That is willing to do it. And let's even say that it's not even non-consensual. Let's just say that, like, you need a really good Christian guy that loves God a lot and loves his wife too. But if he's being told, it has always been prophesied that there would be the second coming of the Lord.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said that he was going to come back as an adult
right.
when he died. So the way that he comes back, maybe this is the Pope saying this to somebody because he's got that direct line. So the Pope says, look, Jesus or the Lord or whoever doesn't come back as an adult. He comes back as a baby. And we need a human vessel to volunteer themselves in order to facilitate that happening.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that there isn't going to be a motherfucking million Christians lined up to be that vessel?
Right.
Absolutely. You would do it.
Yeah.
So what is different from Satanists saying our God is going to come here? We have whatever amount of proof or belief that we need to know we got the fucking spice garden in the kitchen window. We got everything cooking here. The
spice garden.
We're ready to go. We've done all the things to bring the Son of our God to earth to rule in the way that we always hoped that he would.
Right.
What religion wouldn't do that?
Right.
Now, the rape thing.
Doing it through rape is bad.
But guess what? Mary didn't fucking know that she was going to get pregnant either.
Totally. Not disagreeing with you there.
Now, there was no, like, you know, tickling on the sides going down, but in the process of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But maybe at some point.
Maybe they left that out.
They left out the part where Mary goes, this is no dream. This is real.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. With her ankles and by her ears. Yeah.
Again, not excusing it. But when your God is viewed as the bad guy, no one's going to line up for that, right? Like, no one's volunteering for the devil's kid.
Unless they're Satanists.
Well, true. But this seems you have to be very old for that.
And let's go ahead. I'm gonna pull a good move here and say, because there's too long of a history of sexual violence against women. I'm gonna take that off the table. Even if it was rape, but we're going to switch it over to dudes. Like the Pope saying, pulling this woman aside, and she's like, I know you love your husband, but we're talking about fulfilling a prophecy of our Lord coming back to life, and we can do this, and you're going to be pregnant with him. Uh-huh. You are going to give birth to the second coming of God. However, your husband, have you ever seen Pulp Fiction? Or maybe Deliverance. It's the second. It is the prophecy, and all we got to do is have your husband just, go through a new experience.
Yeah,
and
it's called pegging. It's very popular right now. He might be into it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The wife's like, that guy is begging me to shove stuff up his ass nightly. So maybe he's cool with it. But what I'm saying is my whole point is when you look at this movie and you say, like, oh, this horrible thing, what religion on earth wouldn't go to a great extent to fulfill its prophecy of ultimately fulfilling what the religion is about?
Right.
They all would.
Yeah.
Not just Satanists. They all would.
I agree 100%.
So, glass houses. that's my anal rape take on this film. let's talk about fun stuff like the devil.
The slipperiest slope we've ever been on.
We'll get there.
Oh my God. All right. Let's do the Wikipedia facts and then get back onto this one. This is going to be, thankfully we're done with all the problematic things there are to talk about this movie. this was written and directed by Roman Polanski. Interesting. It stars Mia Farrow, John Cassavetes, and Ruth Gordon, and had a budget of $3.2 million at a box office of $33, which I was surprised. It seems low. I mean, this is $68, but it still seems low.
Yeah.
Let's do Nan Sum, and then we'll get into some spoilers. Guy Woodhouse and his wife Rosemary have just moved into the Bramford, a large apartment building in New York with a supposed history of witchcraft and murder. One day in the laundry room, Rosemary meets Terry Gianfino. Gianfino. I even practiced that before. Terry Gianfino, a recovering addict staying with the elderly neighbors, the Castavets. Soon after, Terry apparently jumps to her death from the Castavets apartment. And reaching out to the grieving couple, Guy becomes close with the pair, much to the chagrin of Rosemary, who finds the couple meddling and annoying. Guy, who's an actor, is offered the lead role after a current actor suddenly goes blind. And energized by his good fortune, Guy encourages Rosemary to start a family. But the night they are to conceive, Rosemary gets lightheaded and lies down. Floating in and out of consciousness, Rosemary has visions of a luxurious boat and a disfigured man with red eyes. The next morning, Guy tells her they made love, which is rape.
Yes.
Yeah, not cool. Not cool, Guy. The next morning, Guy tells her that they made love, and she soon finds that they're pregnant. Rosemary's overwhelmed as several tenants in the building begin to help with every aspect of her pregnancy, from the doctor to preparing her meals. But Rosemary begins to think something is amiss, and soon she begins to suspect that those helping her are actually cultists determined to bring about the offspring of the devil. Will Rosemary avoid her hellish fate, or is the world about to become the playroom for Rosemary's baby?
We're both actors, and yep.
Excellent actors.
Yes. And there have been plenty of individual rehearsal nights along the way that we wish we could get out of. Maybe that guy didn't suffer the effects of the devil and he just tried to call off of rehearsal one night and he's like, look, I'm blind.
I'm blind. Yeah. I woke up this morning, couldn't see. Couldn't see at all.
Right. Totally ready to be like jump right back into it the next night. Right. Automatically they recast it. And it's like, well, fuck, I got to keep this blind thing going. Luckily, he's an actor. Jesus. Anyhow, yes, Rosemary's Baby. You had seen this movie before, but when?
It was a while ago. I'm wondering if I watched it because when AFI released their like top 100 back in like the late 90s.
Okay.
I watched all the movies on that list. So it might have been then. It's been a very long time. But I remembered a lot of this movie, which is odd because it also feels like not a lot happens in this movie. But it was also a movie I avoided for a very long time because there was a time where I was at camp as a kid, and I remember another kid talking about this movie, right? And he was like, he was describing the end. He's like, yeah, the end, like, he's like looking at the baby. She's like, what's wrong with his eyes? And a guy's like, he has his father's eyes. And you see the guy over in the corner and he's like rubbing his eyes. And then he looks up and he has no eyes. And I'm like, fuck that. I don't want to watch that. So then when I eventually watched it, waiting for this horrific vision, I'm like, that didn't even fucking happen.
No, absolutely not. I'm sitting here as you're talking.
Everything up to the not having eyes, though, because he is kind of in the corner, like with his, you know, hand up on his head, but he's not like rubbing his eyes like he has no eyes. So I was a little disappointed at that. Like that really kind of crushed the first time I watched it. This time it was far more enjoyable. But yeah, that's my history with this movie.
Yeah.
This was your first time.
Yes, it was. And it was one of those things where it's like, you could almost talk yourself into like that you've already done something. Like, I know I will ride in a hot air balloon someday. Like, I will. So it almost feels like I already have, but I haven't. And I hadn't seen this movie either. And I guess, I don't know. Like, I think I kind of understand, having seen it, why it would be hyped, because I really like this movie.
Yeah.
But it's short of your friend's fictitious description of what happens. I understand how there's not like a hook. There's not a hook where you get to see like, oh, the dude in the wheelchair gets like, you know, chainsawed in half, yeah, or whatever, right. You know, that would make you rush out or me rush out and see it. So I also have like, I'm a little trepidatious when it comes to 60s movies because of their sort of clunkiness, mm-hmm, in general. So I never rushed out to see it, but it was in so many like anthologies and this, that, and the other that it's like, well, what else could happen? What could there be about this film as a whole that I haven't just picked up through the like 12 scenes that I've seen, right, you know, throughout time? But it is engaging and it is for so many different reasons. The pacing mainly. I literally wrote, I mentioned it to you earlier, but I wrote the words that the scenes tumble into each other.
Yeah.
There's no cutaway like when you're used to seeing like 90210 and we know that it's fucking Brenda and Brandon's house. You don't need to show us that shot from the front lawn that you always show before you go into the kitchen. But they don't do any of that. And in a way, this is a little stupid to say, but in a way, it's kind of like apartment living. everything just kind of rolls into each other. And it sort of becomes the essence of what this movie is, which one of the most horrifying things in this movie had to be for you is the idea of apartment neighbors that just don't leave you alone.
God, I know these people exist.
Yeah.
Who have just these fun, relationships with their neighbors, man.
Yeah.
I mean, good on them. I mean, I bet that's healthy, like having good relationships with people.
Well,
but man, it's just, I can't risk it. I can't risk getting involved and then trying to get out of it eventually. Just don't get involved in the first place.
And maybe you're just enthralled with the sprawling landscape that is a goddamn horror movie apartment. That where do these people, if we've said it a million times, how the fuck does an unsuccessful actor
afford
that apartment?
I kept waiting for like, oh, and also Rosemary is the heiress of a perfume company or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this guy's done a few Broadway shows. Not even Broadway, just right. He was in a few plays, because even at the beginning he's like, oh yeah, I was in the Sandpiper, and I was in, he says some other famous play, and she's like, no, he's done some shit in some commercials,
right? Exactly.
But then they still have eight painters working on their, how expensive painters are.
Yeah, like, oh, this apartment,
like one guy who shows up with his son, not eight professionals.
Right. Yeah, like it sucks that this apartment is only 2,500 square feet.
Oh my God.
Gorgeous, but a really gorgeous building. It was, the exteriors were of the Dakota, which really is interesting, and it's the interiors were all shot in L.A. But I'm glad that they've got all those exteriors of the Dakota, because it certainly doesn't look like L.A. where they actually filmed. It almost doesn't even look like New York. It looks like Europe. Like it's very European styling, very, very cool, very, very well suited for a building that in and of itself has sort of a demonic,
gothic feel
connection there. So the origins of this movie are pretty interesting and extremely basic. A guy by the name of Ira Levin wrote the novel in 1967. And what happened is that, it's funny because he has this quote where he says, "I feel bad that my book led to The Exorcist and The Omen. I feel like there wouldn't be such a strong fundamentalism," meaning like Christian fundamentalism, mm-hmm. "if there hadn't been so many of these kinds of books and movies."
No.
A whole generation has more belief in Satan, and I don't even believe in Satan.
Oh, God.
Of course, I didn't send back any of the royalty checks. End quote. So this is a guy that...
And now I believe in Satan.
Right. What's so funny about Ira is that he goes out of his way in any interview at every turn to be like, "I don't believe in this stuff." Almost like... in case it is real, like he's saying, like, it can't get
me. Not my fault, yeah.
Right.
I just made it up.
So it's interesting. He was daydreaming during a lecture one day, and it occurred to him that the most suspenseful part of a horror film or a horror story comes before the horror is revealed.
Right.
Okay, that kind of makes... common sense, but until you really think about it, like, okay, yeah, he's right.
Yeah.
So that led him to the idea of a fetus, because you get a whole 9 months worth of anticipation and suspense with the horror inside the heroine. Like, so it's like the ultimate suspense and anticipation.
Okay.
He kind of forgot about it, didn't think about it again for a few years until he had an absolute just... shitbird of a Broadway show that went absolutely nowhere. And he's like, I got to get my act together here. And he went back and he was fishing for some ideas for like a suspense novel. And then, so while he's kind of thinking about like, okay, what would the fetus be? Like, I got to think of what it would be. This is so funny to talk about this stuff because I talked about this in a recent episode where it was Ghostbusters, where you see these movies and you're like, this has always existed. Like, it right. just like poof came to life. But I mean, there are choices along the way. So he's like, what do I make the baby? And it came down to two things. And one was an extraterrestrial or the devil. And somebody had just come out with a book called The Midwitch Cuckoos.
Rolls off the tongue.
Right. And that dealt with aliens. So he's like, well, I'm stuck with Satan. So here we go. So he didn't have any other ideas for any other supporting like cast or like, you know, plot progression or anything. Just, so he's like, I'm just going to read about some witchcraft and get down to business.
Lady's got the devil, baby. I'm done.
Yeah, right. And he pretty much was.
Right.
So the funny thing is he tried to think of a good date of conception for the baby.
Uh-huh.
Because what he wanted was a date that was like half, like 180 degrees from Christmas.
Okay.
So halfway away would be diametrically opposed to the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
Even though he was born in March. But anyhow.
late June.
According to theologians. So he happened to pick up the paper and he saw that the Pope visited New York City on October 4th. And he's like, well, that's a sign. But yet in the interview was quick to say, but I don't believe in signs. Like, this guy is so neurotic. It's great.
I love it. Yes. I would do the same thing. Like, because, you're just using like a colloquialism. Like, everyone would uses it. It's like if I say, oh, my God, I'm not really, you know, I'm not all of a sudden like, oh, to my Lord and Savior, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I love that every time you have to be like, I'm not though.
Right, exactly. And it's to a humorous extent how much he validates that. But the book was a hit. He wrote the book. He started in 65. He cranked it out. Random House loved it. He had a nice Truman Capote quote on the front cover, which it kind of went on
this
talking
scared
about.
Scared me so much.
Yeah, the devilish tale. But he said, I believed it, and I was altogether enthralled. So that
boom,
was
Tim. You found it. There your Truman Capote is spot on.
Yes. So William Castle, schlockmaster that he is, bought the rights to it like instantly. This is the guy that like rigged up his theater for like the Tingler to like shock people and stuff.
Okay.
So he buys the rights, and he has to go to Paramount for financing. Well, luckily, they handed it over to Robert Evans, and he brought in this hot, young European director who could do no wrong.
Nope.
Roman Polanski. And Levin, now this is going to be a shock because, goddamn, I don't know if we've ever said this on this show. Levin thought that it was the most faithful adaptation ever made from book to film.
Wow.
Like talking about his own material.
Yeah.
Saying Polanski absolutely nailed the fuck out of it. Wow. Not only in dialogue, but even in like colors, color palette that he mentioned. And Levin even says that he was one of many people who claimed to have suggested Mia Farrow for the role.
Okay.
Now, what Polanski originally envisioned was kind of
girl? I'm not going to make any more jokes like that. That's so bad. That's so bad. I'm sorry.
He didn't have to envision it.
No.
But yeah, so he was thinking of a fuller figured.
This is before his arrest, right? I mean,
yes, yeah, it yeah, was. Yes. So he was envisioning more of like a kind of, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but like a little bit
thicker. We're already on the slope, man. Let's just fucking.
Right.
Oh.
He thought of like a fuller figured, like thicker, like girl next door, like an every girl. But Mia Farrow, he said, was always just like a little left of center. And she really is. She has a manner of speaking that is very unique. Now, her mom is from Ireland.
Okay.
Her dad is from Australia.
Okay.
Hey, Kate. And so he like, so she grew up with, you know, a little bit of some accents going on.
Yeah.
And but it's a little bit like transatlantic.
Yeah. Cause I had to look it up. I'm like, is she English? But no, she's
California.
American. Yeah.
But just with international parents.
Yeah.
And then, the funny thing is the Catholic Legion of Decency, which is kind of funny to say anyway, who were already kind of on their last legs, gave it their most damning rating of a C, which means condemned. Like, A, you're okay. B, C, condemned. But that C rating from the Catholic Church propelled this movie into more popularity, so much so that the Legion quickly disbanded afterward. So they condemned this movie.
This isn't working, guys.
Yeah, and then the movie condemned them. So that's the history of what came to be. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't even really have to talk that much about Roman Polanski's development of it because he was extremely faithful to the book.
Yeah.
So, but what we've got here, this is the interesting part because like we talked about earlier, I was thinking that the guy that came up with this is going to be deeply rooted in religion or affected by it or negatively affected by it. But no, he was just a guy that came up with the idea of a killer baby, essentially. Right. And so, and a totally like does not believe in God, does not believe in the devil, believes in none of this, but happened to write a really nice film that is widely regarded as horror. But what were your thoughts about what this movie is?
Well, yeah, because it is, yeah, it's always up there with horror, but what horror happens besides a rape? Other than that, yeah, you know, doting neighbors,
right? Exactly. That, yeah, that's about it. And yet, it's extremely watchable visually. It's fantastic.
Now, satanic cults maybe a little on the scary side.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
If you think the devil's a bad guy, because here's the thing: if you look at the things the devil has done. If you look at, like, the body count attributed to the devil, to the body count attributed to his counterpart, you know, who do you want to follow? The guy who's like, sit in this garden and do what I say, or the guy who's like, hey, would you like to know, like, what right and wrong means?
Yeah.
And, like,
who did the devil
would you
ever
like me
kill?
To free your mind? Yeah, I don't know.
That flood killed a
yeah,
fuck ton of people.
Everyone on the planet right. Several times.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go pee real quick, and I'm gonna come back strong with talking about the clothing. But until then, I want you to. I mean, I don't know how familiar we both like Woody Allen to an extent. A lot of what Mia Farrow has done has been Woody Allen films.
Yeah.
But obviously, she's front and center in this movie.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what you thought about her performance and just Mia Farrow's presence in this movie in general.
Okay. I thought it was very good. I don't claim to know a lot of Mia Farrow. I mean, I definitely know her from this movie. I feel like, you know, I know her through the news more than her work, which is sad to say. So not knowing much about her, I know that she is a good actress and has churned out several excellent performances. Couldn't really tell you a list of movies. I would have to look at a list of her movies and be like, yeah, I think I've seen that one. But I can't be like, oh, here's this Mia Farrow movie I love. This might be the one. But yeah, I think, you know, like Tim said, her voice is so unique and interesting to listen to. She is so sweet and demure, and I don't think she realizes how powerful she could be because she is so strikingly beautiful. Like, she could do whatever the fuck she wanted, but in this movie, she is. I mean, it doesn't help that everyone around her is constantly gaslighting her and making her sick, essentially, right? But yeah, just the way that she handles just her transition from the beginning to the end, I think, is very believable. She's obviously very supportive of her husband. Her, you know, her suspicions are valid, but she never seems out of control until they actually have to paint her as looking out of control. So yeah, I loved her. I don't know if you heard what I said, yeah. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I could point to a lot of Mia Farrow performances that I've seen.
Well,
because I don't really like Woody Allen that much.
Okay.
I'm not seeing a lot of his stuff.
Have you seen Robert Redford's Great Gatsby?
Yes.
So she's Daisy.
Right. Yeah,
and she's fucking and crazy and annoying as fuck. She's wonderful as the in the role, but I mean, she's a nut job.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. She is great. And the poor thing really suffered on this set because she married Frank Sinatra. Like, she was an up-and-coming actress. Hadn't done a whole lot, but up-and-coming. And like you said, physically, like, just a real, real neat person to look at. I mean, just like a sort of angelic, but just she's got a kind of a big face, but it's expressive and it's youthful. She's very young when she made this. She was 22.
Oh, wow.
She was very young.
Wow.
Married to Frank Sinatra, and I'm not going to go off on the fact that I don't think Frank Sinatra is quite the amazing vocalist that he's given credit for. I'm not going to go off on that. I think Elvis Presley is a far better singer. Aside from all of that.
Different music.
True, but let me just say, fuck Frank Sinatra is what I want to say, because here's the thing. This guy, you know, he sees this starlet. He marries her, and then he's like, oh, guess what? By the way, yeah, that whole movie thing, that's over. Like, you're married to me now. You're done with all that.
I didn't know that.
You don't act anymore.
Wow.
And he, you know, he also was, you know, kind of devoutly religious. So if you take the content of the film, if you take the fact that she was going to have a career at all, those are two strikes against Frank in his mind.
Are they married when she makes this?
Yes.
Okay.
Although he motherfucking serves her divorce papers in front of the cast and crew in filming, sends a lawyer there to be like, fuck you, you're going to keep a career and do something for yourself. We're divorced.
Wow.
What a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, that's shitty.
Do you want to know the other side of that? Kind of a cool way to do that? It was Jason Sudeikis and his Olivia Munn, I think it was.
Yeah.
And she had cheated on him. And then he, like, served her papers in the middle of, like, her presenting the movie that she directed. Like, she was, like, in an auditorium giving a little speech before the movie, and someone came up and fucking served her right there on stage.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, it can go both ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's not.
Right.
And I also don't know both sides of their story. I don't know. Maybe he was the asshole.
And Olivia.
He's Jason Sudeikis. He seems like a real treat.
He does. And Olivia Munn was like this like vision of beauty when she first came out. It was like, what? And Jason Sudeikis was just dancing in a jogging suit. And
he is an attractive dude.
He is. But now look at him.
Oh,
Who's ever heard of her stuff since then? And
well,
he is
her,
just.
Yeah, her movie was kind of because it was Don't Worry, Darling. That's what it was. That new Florence Pugh movie. It was not well received.
So, right.
There's a lot of drama backstage. Surprise, surprise.
Really?
Yeah.
With those people involved. But I like her a lot, though, Florence.
Florence Pugh. Oh, yeah. Not from Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
Like, it was like just reading about that movie. Because apparently Olivia Munn was having a relationship with Harry Styles, and then she was kind of derelict on her directing duties. And I read that Florence Pugh would like direct scenes.
Wow.
Yeah. Florence Pugh don't fuck around.
No. And she's great. She really is great.
Yeah. You know, she was great in Midsommar. By the way, Midsommar, he's directed by Ari Aster. Is it time I bring up Bo is Afraid now? No, kidding. Real quickly, I saw Bo is Afraid. It might be my favorite movie of all time now. Just going to put that out there.
And that's a very, very like soft mite.
Yeah. I already sent around the Drake meme with the like no thanks and then the pointing with the Jaws poster and the Bo is Afraid poster.
Yes. One thing you'll notice in this movie, in the opening credits, which are very cute, by the way, I love that they're written in pink.
Yeah. Get a nice little la 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 song over it.
And you get a name, a familiar name in Vidal Sassoon.
Yes.
Okay. And now here's the thing with that. So I, you know, obviously.
Are they like a new thing in the city? Are they like a bit, like they've made a big splash? Like, because the 60s with hair fashion. You know, I guess women's hair in the 50s was actually a big fucking deal. There was a lot of hairdressing going on then.
Well, let me tell you the goddamn mental thunderstorm that I undertook in Vidal Sassoon's name being on screen.
Okay.
So I see Vidal Sassoon. And I remember also, now he's a hairdresser, right? Yeah. He's a stylist. Okay. He had salons and all that jazz. And then I remembered the Sassoon jeans, right? That were popular in the 80s. So I look up a little bit more about the Sassoon jeans, and I come across a commercial from the 80s of Elton John interpolating himself, changing the lyrics to his own songs.
Oh, man.
And saying like that, put them on, put them on, put on those Sassoons. And I'm like, wait a second.
Oh, no.
Sassoons? Because I remember just a handful of years after that, Dr. Dre saying, been in the game 10 years making rap tunes ever since Honeys was wearing Sassoons. Now I'm in a goddamn tailspin because I've got Sassoons, which I thought were Sassoons, and Vidal Sassoon. This whole thing comes to a head. Two titans.
Oh my
of God. Titans of fashion, albeit at either ends of the body, coming to a head in a court of law.
Wait, is this Elton John and
no, it's Vidal Sassoon and the Jean Company.
Oh, okay. So they are two separate things.
They are.
Okay.
Vidal struck first blood. He took them to court, and he said no more. And they said, look, our name is spelled S-A-S-S-O-N. You are S-A-S-S-O-O-N. We didn't tell anybody to say Sassoon. That's just what the public did. And he's like, well, I don't give a shit. This ends now. And they said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to compromise. All of our publicity from here on, we will pronounce the name Sassoon. And that way, it'll eliminate the confusion. Vidal, struck by that act of grace, actually met them halfway and said, okay, I'll do you one better. I'm going to make sure that in all of my logos that if I have Sassoon, I will put Vidal in front of it.
Okay.
And as a result of that giant act of peace in humanity, the world continued to turn. So that's where you get.
That was amazing.
Sassoon and Sassoons, if ever there was a bit of confusion there.
Wow.
But yes, we get him in the movie, but as you so beautifully pointed out, what happens to poor Vidal Sassoon?
It's a weird thing because, yeah, I think one of the famous things from this movie is her little pixie haircut that she gets, right? This very short, boyish haircut that she gets. Like, that's kind of a burned image from the movie. You know, and she shows up. She's like, I went to Vidal Sassoon. Like, here, and I was like, oh, okay, there's like, that's kind of their like little marketing thing. Like, we'll put you in the movie, you know. Normally when you do that, you're like, oh man, need a Coke? I love Coke. All right, let's go on our adventure now, you know? But in this movie, it's like, I went to Vidal Sassoon. Yeah, well, it looks like shit.
Yeah.
Why don't you go fucking kill the person who gave you that haircut? I'm going to jump out of the window if you don't just shave it off right now.
Kill them and yourself.
Right.
Yes.
And not only one, there are at least two. I don't think there's three, but there are two people who are like, what did you do? Why did you do that to yourself?
Yeah.
And sue the man who did that to you.
And they put that cut on her when they also
Vidal Sassoon.
Yeah, Vidal Sassoon is fine. You're within, you're not going to get sued.
Well, no, just they keep repeating who made this. We're already at the devil with your haircut.
Right. It's a fun name to say. Speaking of fashion and my passion for fashion, Guy looks impeccable.
He does look great.
He looks great. You could literally – I read an article just about the fashion of this movie, and it said that You could literally take anything in her husband's wardrobe, put it on a man today, and it's everything that every man should own. He even has a scene where he wears a sweatshirt, and it's appropriate. Like, it looks good. You got the slacks, you got the sweaters, you got the suits, the overcoats. I mean, he looks fantastic. It's not flashy, but right. He just looks put together all the time.
All his clothes look tailored.
Really? Yes. And it started making me think about about men's fashion in general. And the thing is, like, I know that there might be some guys that are like, look, I just don't give a shit. Like, I just put stuff on and yeah. That's it.
I used to be that, Tim, until today.
Yeah, I know. Well, describe for our listening audience.
I kind of treated myself. The funny thing is, my birthday episode's already come out. We're recording this still before my birthday's even
double
happened.
Birthday episode, yeah.
But I treated myself. I've mentioned the skirt that I have that I'm afraid to wear out in public. And I went, you know what? Fuck that. And I was like, I searched skirts for men.
Yeah.
And I found some nice designer kilts.
Yeah.
So I'm wearing a fucking kilt right now.
You are.
A cargo kilt. And I'm wearing a collared button-up shirt. It's a nice, breezy cotton shirt. Never would do that. T-shirts all day long for me.
It's a great color on you. It's a deep green. It's beautiful.
Here's what's crazy. Yeah. Okay, so I have this shirt, right? I also have another shirt. These shirts are from fucking Target, okay?
Really?
Nothing special about them.
Okay.
They feel very comfortable. But this other one I have, it's a white shirt, and then it's like blue. It's like sunflowers, like drawn in blue. It's like the pattern is.
Ooh, okay.
So it looks very nice. Now, you know, I don't make a big deal about it. I took these shirts. The first time I wore them was I went to Los Angeles recently to see my favorite band, Phish, play at the Hollywood Bowl. And I took these two shirts without telling, because my wife and daughter love when I mean, as far as this is dressing up for me, they love it. They love it. So I like secretly took these shirts so I could send them pictures of like, ooh, me and my new shirt at the show. Now, we're leaving. I'm wearing the white one, right? We're leaving the show. This strange woman walks up to me and says, that shirt looks really good on you. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And she's like, you should wear that more. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, that feels, what? That felt unnatural. And then she just like disappeared into the crowd. And I'm like, that was a weird experience. That's one of those I can't explain. Was she just being nice? But she seemed to like hit everything I'm thinking in my head, you know, like, should I wear this shirt more often? And yeah. Then all of a sudden, you should wear that shirt more often. Now, fast forward. So I'm like telling everyone this story. It's like a great, and just people do not walk up to me out of the blue and compliment my clothes ever.
Yes.
I have this Mandy sweatshirt I've been getting that people are like, is that Nicolas Cage? That's yeah. As much as you get out of it. So then we went out to the old watering hole the other night. I wore the shirt again. Again, some random woman walks up to me and is like, I really like that shirt. And I'm just like, what the fuck? It's from Target. What is with this shirt? I look great in it, apparently.
That's fantastic.
And it's not this shirt. So if you think this looks good, Tim, just imagine how on the floor you'd be if you saw me in the other shirt.
I suppose so. I mean, it feels like this is almost like otherworldly. Like,
yeah, I'm if on you, a new fashion adventure for 47. Let's go.
Yeah. And if you ask around like about this lady, they'll be like, well, that's impossible. My Aunt Celeste died 25 years ago. I mean, that's like this.
That's all the proof I need that ghosts are real.
Right. I put on a button shirt and ghosts are real. I think it's great.
Yeah.
And the thing
anyway, enough about my fashion.
But I'll tell you.
If you're going to compliment me, you can go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this. I could literally, just off the top of my head, okay, three colors. I could get, we could do brown, gray, and navy. I could get you jackets, vests, shirts, and pants.
No. All right, stop.
Let me just say right now, you could get dressed in the dark, in the dark, and look amazing.
Thank you.
But
I'm going to do this on my own, though.
Yeah, and I think you're off to a great start. My God, you're getting that I love that. What are
this shirt's
are
nice
those? They've got cacti
yeah,
on
little
there.
Cacti on them.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah,
I love it. I love that color. Rosemary looks adorable in this movie. Now,
constantly.
Girls, if you want to know how to get that Rosemary look, it's real simple.
I guess it's a blue shirt. Here's the sunflower shirt.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a statement.
Yeah.
It's a statement piece. I like it.
It's a blue shirt, white sunflowers.
I love it.
Why did I think it was a white shirt? Anyway.
So, Rosemary, girls, if you want to get that Rosemary look, it's very simple. Cardigan, shift dress. If you don't know what a shift dress is, it's a generally sleeveless shirt, or I'm sorry, dress, short dress that hangs straight down from the shoulders. It's not fitted at all. So some people call it a baby doll dress. So it's sleeveless, hangs straight down. The sexiness, or sort of the cute sexiness of a shift dress, comes from the fact that it's short. So you're going to see a lot of leg. So it's going to hit like mid-thigh. You put a cardigan on top of that and some Mary Janes. Mary Janes are a low-cut shoe that have a strap across the top of the foot, maybe one, maybe two straps. And maybe if you really want to go for it with her look, you get like a cool hat from the 60s. But she, regardless, she looks fucking great in this movie.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I guess that's the part that struck me so much, that literally this movie was being filmed at the same year that my parents graduated high school. And it, everybody looks fantastic. And not only that, but like, you kind of think of your parents' generation or 25, 30 years before, whatever, being like so out of relatability for you and your generation. But as you were watching this movie, didn't you feel like these people seem like really down to earth for what would be a generation before? Like the conversations, the reactions,
yeah,
like it all seemed pretty relatable. Like, yes. it wasn't like, you know, a 1950s reporter reporting on, you know, it wasn't like that. It was like,
yeah, no one talks weird in this movie.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Except for Ruth Gordon.
Yes. Ruth Gordon. Academy Award winning.
Yeah, I was telling you, I'll share the story again because I was telling you before. Yeah, she won the Academy Award for this movie. Rightly so. She rules in it. Like she rolls so hard, it's where you're like, is this like some just weird random lady they got? Cause she's so unique in this movie. But no, she's just an incredible actress. So she wins the Academy Award. Here's her acceptance speech. It's so adorable. It's very short. She essentially gets up, she, you know, gets in front of the mic and she's just like, you have no idea how encouraging this is or something like that. She then is like, my first movie I was in was in 1915, and here I am now winning this Academy Award. I don't know what took me so long. Very wow. Funny. She then quickly thanked like everyone, all the principal people involved in the movie. Thank you, Mia. Thank you, Roman. Thank you, John. Whatever. And then was just like, to those who voted for me, thank you so very much. And to those who didn't, please excuse me. And then walked off stage. Classy as fuck. Amazing.
No mention of sweatshops.
No. Didn't thank her lawyer.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like, great.
Man, animals are people.
And now let me ask you this. Are you sure that the very definitive speech cadence that she uses in this movie is not her real way of talking?
No, she did not get up there. Holy and go, fuck. Oh, you have no idea I'm going to do that.
That's fantastic then, because she hits that sort of like, there was that SNL skit about that sort of like sort of half drunk, like holding the martini. Do you remember that skit? Like, I don't, it was kind of from maybe the 90s or early 2000s.
Like Tom Hanks.
No, was it
Tom Hanks playing Dean Martin?
I don't think, no, it was, okay. God, I can't think of the female.
Dean Martin is awesome.
It was a female performer, and it was like kind of like her thing that she was just sort of drunk all the time, like just halfway drunk.
Okay.
Like, and but so she has that sort of cadence where she doesn't even really finish pronouncing like the last words of any given sentence.
Yeah.
And it just kind of ran like the dialogue is just sped through in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's still a 2-hour movie.
Adds like a weird syllable. I can't remember the exact word, but it's like garbage became like garbage.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
So
yeah.
Weird.
So that's the kind of neat thing about this movie. Now, keep in mind, there was one thing that with me not having read the book, I can't speak to this 100%, but I did read something about a very, very specific request and borderline demand of Roman Polanski's was that he wanted, because he also doesn't believe in any of this. So he wanted there to be until, I'm sorry, the final scene is a little cat out of the bag-ish, but he wanted there to be enough ambiguity so that if you're first watching this film in 1968, that it's like, is this all in her head? Now, that sounds a little silly to us now because it seems so obvious, but listen to this for a second. It might seem obvious to you that they're like obviously up to something and they want to, you know, bring back the son of the devil and all that sort of thing. But you never, ever hear that old couple say to each other like, hey, this devil thing is going really good. Right. We've really got him now. Like we've promised guy like eternal fame and wealth and fortune if he allows us to rape his wife. Like there is none of that. So while it seems pretty obvious, there's nothing that blatantly tells the audience that, yes, these people are Satanists.
During the rape.
Yes.
That's it, though.
Yeah.
Because they break the veil a little bit. And I think that's clever how they do that, where they don't, Ruth Gordon, I can't remember her character name.
Mrs. Cassavetes.
Yeah, Cassavetes, whatever it is. She like brings them down moose, like a fucking tub of moose. Oh, by the way, real quick tangent. Did you notice how quickly John Cassavetes eats desserts in this movie?
Yes.
The first time they have dinner with the Cassavetes, she hands him like a slice of pie or something, and he is just like stabbing it. And it's like he doesn't know how to act and eat at the same time. So he's just like stabbing and trying to eat it. And it's like the camera's on him, and then it pans back over to Ruth Gordon, and then she's handing him another piece. He's already done with that one. And the moose, he's just like,
yes,
tears through the moose. So hilarious how fast he eats desserts in this movie. But yeah, so they give her the moose, you know, very cleverly. She's like, and it's starting to tip us off because, yeah, there is nothing, unless you know what this movie is, nothing so far where you're like, something weird's up. Until she's like, this has like a little undertaste to it, a little chalky, chalky. So they're drugging her, but she's not all the way drugged. So she gets to be a little awake during the performance.
Right.
Let's stop using that word.
Yeah.
And she's even like, you know, he's like, I think she might be awake. As long as she ate the mouse, she'll be fine.
Yeah. Calling
she
it
calls
mouse.
Moose mouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was probably a choice of hers, and they went, let's run with it, let's go.
Right, yes.
But yeah, so you get that, and you get all the people that you've kind of seen already. But even that, you're like, is this real? Like, you don't know as the viewer if it's real or not yet. But yeah, that's the only time where they're like, here's what we're doing.
And that's the thing. Like it begs the question. One of the biggest criticisms of this movie is that a lot of people will flat out just ask the question, how did she not know? Meaning Mia Farrow's character.
Yeah.
How did Rosemary not put it together earlier that something really strange is going on? But I think that's unfair because
if you have every single person in your environment telling you the opposite, this is literally what gaslighting is. This movie is like way ahead of its time as far as gaslighting goes. Because you have the husband. She wakes up. She's got the scratches, and he's like, he's ahead of it. Like, I already trimmed my nails. Sorry, couldn't stay off you. You were laying there limp as a fish, and I had to go for it.
Yeah,
and scratch you up. Like, all right, they get her the doctor. That doctor's in on it. So anyone that she thinks she can trust is in on it. So why would she think anything is wrong? And so the one guy she does trust that's not in on it is like, something might be weird.
Right. And so I don't agree with that criticism at all. Like, I don't.
And what are you going to do? Wake up and go, honey, these scratches, I know, are the devil's. They're not yours. I know. Everyone in the building was in here last night watching the show. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to jump there.
Right. When the devil claws you, you know
you
it.
You know it.
Right. Now, you mentioned the doctor that they fix her up with, because obviously.
Yeah, Dr. Saperstein.
And where have you heard that name before?
I don't know, but I'm like,
sure,
this name has become a thing because of this movie, but I don't remember how, like, where I knew that name.
Recent episode of In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh,
it's Dr. Saperstein at the insane asylum.
Okay. That's that is okay.
Yeah, played by that kooky actor. What's his name? John.
Yeah, John something.
Yeah, but anyhow, so it kind of made me wonder. I wonder if there are other Dr. Sapersteins, because sometimes Hollywood is funny like that. Like they'll pick a name and they'll apply it to the same type of character in unrelated films, like all the way down.
Yeah.
So yeah, we get another or the original Dr. Saperstein,
and that guy, that actor. I only also know him from Trading Places.
Oh, that's
He's one of the the Mortimers.
Absolutely. God, I knew he looked familiar. You're 100% right.
He looks good in this movie. Like, he's kind of old in that movie, but 20 years younger, that guy.
Kind of looked a little like Beatnik style. Yeah. Like, yeah. And you know, it is all plausible because, you know, you have this very sweet character of Rosemary, and a lot of stuff is happening quickly around her. So you could see her getting sort of swept up in things and going along with it, just trying, you know, for the greater good. What's really more interesting to me is the character of Guy. Mm-hmm. Because it would be one thing if it was like the Little Mermaid and it was like, like, I'm going to put you under a spell and you're going to go all googly eyed or whatever. But no. And they make a point of saying actors are very self-centered people, right, which is extremely true. Take it from us.
I mean, take it from me. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you could trust Tim, but definitely take it from me.
Yeah. Speaking of me. very, very self-centered people. So the thing is, but now think about how good these Satanists are. They're good at being Satanists. If there's one thing about a Satanist, they're good at it. And think about if you pull Guy aside and you say, which Roman Cassavetes does at one of their little initial apartment parties. And think about this. If you're Guy and you have this gentleman say to you, like, look, we're a part of something bigger than anything you've ever known. I can offer you and your wife a life like you could only dream of. I can make all of your dreams come true, not only yours, but I can make you so successful that you can create a great life for your wife and all of your children. Now, we got to do this one thing first, but you can still have children after that.
Yeah.
You'll have all the riches of the world. You will have been a part of this. Now, maybe let's give Guy a little bit of credit. Maybe he was a little on the fence at the first moment of mention of that. But then he gets the phone call about the actor going blind and him getting the part.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he gets the part. He gets this recognition. He gets this fame. And he's like, I like this.
Right.
I don't want this to end. Now, is he a horrible human being for agreeing to have his wife raped by evil? Yes. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, I really found myself looking at him in the final scene where he was just shameful. Like, you could tell he was feeling the shame of it. Because
only because he got caught.
Of course. Yeah. He would have kept that thing going forever. but I think that that's really interesting because she's just being tricked into all this thing. He has chosen to be a part of
it. And he shows... you know, sometimes, like, if you watch a movie, right, and, like, a character's doing something secretly, sometimes they'll leave little clues, right, where you watch it again, you're like, oh, I really know what's going on here. This guy doesn't give a fuck, does not, like, is in 100%. And it's like we were talking about at the beginning, just for a play,
right?
Like, I'd be like, yeah, I'll do that. What movie am I starring
in? Sure. Like, sure.
Come on, dude.
That's fair because I even thought about that a little bit. I'm like, and I don't know if maybe this would have ruined it. Maybe it's better for him to be all in. But I think to, like, broaden that character a little bit, maybe a couple very, very, very subtle scenes, even if he was by himself. And not in eyesight or earshot of Mia's character, of Rosemary's character. I wonder if it would have added a little bit of depth to his character to see him struggle with it a little bit, you know, and be pained by what he's putting his wife through. I would have maybe liked that, but maybe they just want him to be that fucking prick that doesn't give a shit.
Because even, like, after she gives birth and she hears a baby crying And she's like, he's like, oh, like this new couple moved in. And she's like, do they have a baby? And he's just like, oh, yeah, how could you tell that? Like, how you're not just racked with guilt and just be like, oh my God, you heard the baby that we said, you know, even though you just lost one, you know,
right.
But no, he's just like brushing his teeth like, oh yeah, how do you hear about that? I'm crazy, right? I have a baby in the building.
Actors are sociopaths is what they are. They're just fucking nuts. And yeah, so he fits that. And yeah, like he's just, even there's a scene where he's like, going on and on about this shirt that he bought, right. Where it's like, who gives a like, your wife is pregnant. Like, you made a deal with the devil and all you can talk about is a shirt. Well dressed as he may be, but still it's really, I guess one of the questions that we have to ask ourselves about this movie, like we discussed a little bit earlier, is what percentage of horror do we really have here?
Yeah.
And maybe the horror is, cause I'll tell you this. I have a lot of dreams. I wouldn't go ahead and call them full on nightmares, but a big portion of the dreams that I have are of like me realizing that I'm in a circumstance where things are not right and I've got to fix it. Like everybody is not, I don't want to say kind of like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers thing where like people are all in on this stuff and it's like, oh no, they're in on it too, you know?
Right.
But it's like that is its own brand of horror where this poor thing is. First of all, I wrote, I'm not even going to find the sentence, but I wrote something in here about how trying of an experience it must be to be pregnant.
Oh,
like, I mean, God. You've got all of this hormone, body stuff, body changing, life inside you, you know, am I doing enough? I feel guilty that I'm not doing enough. Should I be doing more? Is the baby going to be healthy? You're going through all this stuff and you're surrounded by Satanists.
Right.
Like that has got to be a rough go. And she really fucking tries to hold on. But what really is the soul crusher? And I'm going to go pee one more time, but you're going to enjoy this. I'm going to admit my embarrassment that I didn't even recognize him.
Oh, okay. The Grodster.
Yes. Yes. There is this one final bastion of like hope that we have as audience members been led to believe that is the one good thing that we could hang on to other than her friend Hutch.
Yeah.
But the one person in the medical field that could stand up for her and be like, holy shit, everything you're taking is wrong. Why are you doing that? Why are you drinking this? Blah, blah, blah. It's Dr. Hill, played by
Charles Grodin.
And what did you think about him in this?
I mean, you know, it's his first movie. So it's easy for me to, as someone who loves Charles Grodin and his work, it'd be easy for me to be like, fucking killed it. Like, no one could play Dr. Hill like Charles Grodin. But, you know, he just gave a good performance as Dr. Hill. I think especially when she comes back to him, because she does see him very early on, and that's when they're like, you're not seeing this Dr. Hill guy. You're going to see Dr. Saperstein. He was on, I think he was on like, a TV program or something that was like his big. So because he was famous, he's a better doctor, right? And so now once she's suspicious of that maybe there may be something going on, and she leaves Dr. Saperstein's office before because he's going to birth the baby, deliver the baby, and she skedaddles and goes to Dr. Hill and tells him the whole story. And just in that scene where he's like just listening to her, that I thought was his best scene. Like, and it's weird to say, but like his line of like, can I keep this? Like when she hands him the book,
yes.
It felt so natural.
Yeah.
And like you don't know, which is true with a lot of doctors. When you talk to them, you're trying to gauge like, how do they feel about this situation?
Right.
But he's just kind of like absorbing information, which is, I guess, a good thing a doctor should do as well.
Let me ask you this question about him. It's very basic. Do you feel that A, he is a part of that group, or do you feel B, that he thought, I just have a girl here that I need to call her doctor of record because she's kind of going off the rails.
Yes. Yeah. No.
So you don't think he was part of the devil thing? Okay.
No.
Okay.
Because that's when they come in, they're like, don't fucking scream.
Yeah.
Don't make a scene.
Yeah.
If Dr. Hill was in on it, he'd be like, cool, like tell her you're giving her a vitamin shot and then sedate her and we'll be right there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
He probably still could have done that anyway, but I think they didn't want to drag her on.
Right. So.
But yeah, no, I think he was just like, you know, like any doctor would, like, oh, you are going to another doctor. You've come to me with a story about how a satanic cult got the devil to have sex with you, and now you're birthing his baby.
Yeah, you're sitting there watching it.
Necklace again? Okay.
You're watching it, and you're like, no, 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 yeah, no.
Like if someone came to you and was like, here, I read this book on witchcraft. This is happening to me. You'd go, oh, hold on.
Sure. Well, and the thing is, I wouldn't, but I mean, the thing is.
You'd be like, which page?
Yeah. No, I've already read it. But you know, so the thing is, like, this poor Rosemary, like, as probably anybody would, but like, just as willing to trust anybody. Like if she was a little bit more clandestine, if she was a little bit more secretive, but the thing is, that is supposing that she knows what's going on, which she really doesn't.
Right.
I mean, until she sort of figures it out from these clues from her friend Hutch, who is this sort of anchor to the history of the building and the Cassavetes and that sort of thing. But you know, God, if she had just kind of like kept the plate a little closer to the chest.
Well, and by the end too, once she figures it out, it's like, it's too late. Like you are 9 months pregnant. Like you, what are you going to do? Like, well, I'm going to run off to Vermont. Like,
right.
You've got to fucked. You got to deliver this baby.
Right. Well, that's true. And that's kind of that. Now that's the one thing I'm going to say this. We got a movie about a baby. Baby's in the goddamn title.
Yeah.
I love babies. I love them. I want to eat their toes. I want to feel their little fingers like around mine. Right, like, now. I love babies so much. We don't get one fucking baby in this whole movie.
Well, there's a baby at the end.
Well, but you we don't see it.
A baby.
Yeah.
Well, no, because it's supposed to look. Yeah, it's like, I mean, wait, what does happen to this baby? Because it's not like, oh, here's a normal baby that is the devil's. It's like, this thing looks like a monster.
To quote an offstage repeated line from our performance of Hurley Burley, what the fuck you doing, baby? like, this baby, we hear that its eyes are strange.
Yeah.
But then there's that other person that says, what about their hands and legs, feet? And you're like, okay, what's really going on with this baby?
Is there anything normal on this baby?
Right. And the thing is, so we're left to guess that the baby probably looks a lot like a sort of like Calibus type creature, like a cloven hoofed.
Yeah.
You know,
a satyr.
Hairy. Yeah. And kind of like the it's Calibus in you remember Clash of the Titans.
That kind of guy. Oh, okay,
like
okay.
A little extra hair on the face, and you know, but with those eyes as well. But the thing is, we get now. Here's the real question, though. This is the real, real question. So we get this great moment, and it's almost comedic at this point.
It's so over the top and awesome.
She walks into this secret room. She finally realizes what this sort of secret closet.
Yeah, great setup too.
Yeah,
because that's like one of the first things covered where they're looking at this apartment, and then they're like, "Oh, she like shoved the woman who lived here shoved this cabinet into like to block this closet. Like, why would she do that?" And then she like, you know, uses the closet. A great part that I really related with because, you know, Guy comes home and she has papered the shelves in there. And I remember when we first got married in our first house, coming home and how proud Nancy was. Like while I was at work, she had papered the shelves.
The contact
in the
paper.
Kitchen. Yeah, contact paper in the kitchen. Feels so good. She was so exhausted. So I know, and I've done it. I've tried to do it ever since. I'm like, I don't want to have her to put through that. So. But yeah, so that I was like, oh, I've been there. Aww. That is a good feeling. Like, look at all the shit I did in our new house. So yeah, then she eventually, I don't know. it is kind of weird though, because it's like she never really has like a moment for the audience where we're like, oh, she knows what's going on in the closet. Mm-hmm. Just all of a sudden, she's just like, I'm going through the closet.
You're right,
and you come along with me.
Yeah. But at that point,
we kind of know that that's going to happen. And it's kind of a weird thing where we're like, as soon as she goes to the closet, you're like, I know it's coming.
Like, I see what you're saying. It would have been a little bit better if, like, rather than hearing noises through the wall, if she had heard it, like, walking past the closet.
Right.
Like, that might have been something.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Some hint to where she's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
This closet thing that the Chekhov's closet.
So she walks into that room and... It's funny, like, I'm not going to go off on this tangent. The only thing that I can describe it as is the same feeling that I felt when I interrupted a convocation in high school. It's kind of like when you walk into a room and you expect everybody to immediately turn as soon as you walk in, but then nobody does, and you're like, and she's holding a knife, a giant fucking knife, yeah. And everybody's just kind of like doing their thing, you know. One person might react or whatever, but she just walks in there.
Even the one lady who sees, because there's her and the guy, what's the was he a dentist? God, I can't remember his name now, like Dr. Shank or something?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And or that Char. Guy,
yeah. Doctor is like, yeah.
Something like that. Something very short that starts with an S, I believe. And that's a guy where you look him up and you're like, I only know this guy as a actor who's 95 years old. Like, he kind of looks familiar in this movie, but you're just like, I don't know what I know him from, but I know that guy. But the look on his wife's face is more of a like, oh, like you almost would think, oh, shit, she's here. And that is the reaction of something like one lady fucking screams. Oh,
yes.
But this lady is just like, oh, here she is.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Right.
Let's see how this goes.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a cool, fucking awesome look.
Right. Yeah. I'm fucking tired of dealing with this charade.
Right.
Like, you know,
no one likes you.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, she walks into that room and you know, and I love her in that moment because she has no more fucks to give. She's like still in her little like nightie or whatever. She's got this knife and she's like, I don't give a fuck about anything anymore. Like, you guys stole my baby and I don't give a shit what happens in here. Could completely be overpowered by the 20 people in that room.
Yeah.
But she just goes in there because she's just had enough. Now, the question is, what I was getting at is, we go through this whole thing where we have this nice moment where If this Roman guy weren't so charming, like, he seems so like nice. A nice dude.
He might be a neighbor I'd talk to.
Right, exactly. He's like a nice, like, level-headed, gentle dude. And he sort of says, like, no, like, let her be the mother. Like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens here. So when...
I will say this about him as a neighbor,
yeah.
And I'm sure this is just to service the script. But what I appreciate about him as a neighbor, he seems to know when to leave. Like, he does stop by to like chat with her for a second, that he's like, okay, gotta go. Like,
yeah.
Cool. Like, he's not just like hanging around and trying to think of things to say. I would like a neighbor like that.
Yeah.
Where I'm not the one being like, okay, I gotta go.
One thing I will say, I don't know if this is a touch of realism or just lack of fucking like makeup powder in 1967, but when Hutch is making dinner for them in that earlier scene, is sweating his fucking ass off. Holy balls. But anyhow, she's approaching.
They must have been using like a real hot stove or something.
Yeah.
It's just like on his eighth take.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't know if I've got all my lines. Like, so she's approaching the bassinet, which is cute. Draped in black, you know, upside down cross hanging above it, just adorable. And she approaches it, and she knows that the lady is rocking the bassinet too fast. And so
what was that lady thing, like Lucy Louise or something?
Yeah. And yeah,
and that
she's kind of funny.
She's awesome.
She is.
She is so weird. And the only one where you're like, that lady would make me suspicious.
Right.
Because there is like a part, and maybe
like, that lady is a Satanist because she's tired of working at Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Like,
here's a weird sequence, and tell me if I missed something or not. It's, I believe it's post-birth, and Rosemary is still laid up in bed, and they're bringing her food and whatnot. Yeah. And so, like, she's Louise is taking the tray from her, right? And then she's like, oh, hold on. And she, like, picks up some other garbage and then, like, goes to put a spoon in a glass. And she's like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just not a good idea. Like, acts real weird. So I don't know what that was about.
Oh, okay, so what they've told Rosemary is that you're pumping the breast milk just to get it out of you.
Okay.
But they're using the breast milk to give to the baby, and she's right. putting a dirty spoon in the breast
oh,
milk.
Oh, just because it was a dirty spoon. Okay. Yeah, okay, right. Okay. But then right after that, there's like this weird camera pan. After she leaves and Rosemary's like, oh, that's kind of weird. Then it just kind of like pans down to like this white painted brick at the base of her bed and lingers on that for like 5 seconds.
That's where the pills are. She's putting the pills in between the brick.
Oh, my God. I didn't see
it's,
that.
Yeah, it's showing that that's where she's tucking the pills. These
bits? Okay.
Great transfer of the movie, by the way. I don't know how you missed it, because it actually, that was the one thing that I was really worried about, where I'm like,
By the end, I'm like looking up actors and shit. I was just,
But I mean, no, it looks crystal clear. I watched it on Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think. Great. Oh, I got it on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
It's a Paramount movie. But yeah, the imagery of Louise rocking that, like, I do remember that from, I don't even know if I had seen the actual movie yet, but I saw that scene, and just like how she's rocking it is so off-putting and upsetting.
Yeah.
Even though it's not like but you can tell she's not angry. Like, she just doesn't know what she's doing. That imagery really intrigued me, like, the first time I saw it, and I was like, this ending seems weird, and the whole thing is weird, like, from just how, I love how easily they're like, once she's just kind of found it out, they're just like, yeah, we're Satanists, hail Satan, everyone, right, hail Satan, and just like, cool, finally, we get to yell hail Satan.
Yes.
Oh, like, what a release this is.
But no, you're right.
And like, they're like, so excited about Satan.
Well, that's the thing you've got to when you're thinking about that rocking scene and her rocking the baby so fast, it's like, these aren't like ancient Satanists. Like, they're of our world. And she's probably looking down at this thing and being like, look, it has cloven hooves. Like, you could rock this fucker as fast as you want. It's half animal. But yet that's the beauty of Rosemary then approaching the bassinet, rocking it gently, even though Roman has already taken over and he's already rocking it gently because he fucking rules. But she takes over, and then we finish with that look on her face where she is looking down at her baby the way that any new mother would look down, with this sort of glowing look of like, look at what I've created. So now the question is what happens from there?
Great question. Because now we're getting into the Omen territory, where it's like, what kind of powers does this baby have? Like, what's it like? We do know in the Omen, he becomes president. Like, that's kind of the end goal there.
Well,
but certainly this Broadway actor doesn't have the political connections to make this hairy cloven baby president.
No. However, there is a sequel.
That's right. Is it called What Happened to Rosemary's Baby? Am I right about that?
No, that is a title of something.
Okay. Though. I saw that briefly.
It's called Son of Rosemary. And it was a novel that Ira Levin wrote in, I think, 1997. And he, what we've got is, they were worried that ended up happening was that they were worried that Rosemary was going to, like, maybe, even if we get that last look at the end, that she was going to try to steal him away and, like, do something bad. So they put her into a coma, the Satanists do. And interestingly enough, Andy, or Adrian, her baby, grows up to, like, obviously his appearance is enough to where he can pass. Uh-huh. Like, because he becomes this sort of, like, philanthropist. Like, he's not a dominant world leader. Like, he's actually using his powers for good.
Okay.
But what the tragedy of it is,
if you, you know, think that Satan might be the good guy,
right?
Makes sense. Because they are like, yes, he's coming to like tear down the powerful people that control us.
Yes. And the thing is that he, what ends up happening is that, this is sort of the tragedy of it, is that while he's trying to do good, first of all, Rosemary comes out of her coma, and there's this whole big, because he's a nationally, internationally recognized person, that it's this kind of like glory, like, oh my God, his long lost mother is now back, and like she finds him, and he's this good guy, and everything's great. But like, the sad part is that the plan is already happening despite whatever he does. He holds this like candlelight vigil for like some event, and that gathering of the candlelight vigil spreads a disease that kills all of humanity.
Oh my God.
It's not even his fault.
Wow.
But it's all coming
into play. What an interesting take. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That must be a terrible movie, though.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
What year was that made? Do you know?
Well, there wasn't. It's just the book. Nobody's ever made the movie.
Oh, okay.
He just wrote a sequel to his book.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it's called Son of Rosemary. And I've never even heard of it before outside of my research. I'm like, keep flipping my pages like I'm going to find out my notes. But that's the gist of it. So, maybe check that out. But I think it's a really interesting take that it wasn't just like what the Satanists were probably imagining. Like, this guy is going to kick ass. It's probably some guy that owns a big company and he's like, my kid is going to take this over and send it into the stratosphere. And then the kid comes along and he's like, actually, I'm all about helping people, right. And so
I love theater, Dad.
Right. Yeah. The map is sideways. But the thing is, we're going to fix that. We're going to break into his house.
No, keep it.
But anyhow.
I'm going to hang it up at his funeral.
Yeah, right. Just like flip it over to the blanks like side. But really interesting take on that. I think that would be really cool. Now, yes, has the Omen explored a lot of this territory and done it pretty well? Like, I'm sorry, like I'm not going to shit on the Omen. Like,
yeah.
Maybe it's derivative, but it's pretty great.
Yeah.
Did we?
And a killer kid's way better than a potential killer baby.
Right.
Who turns out to be some hippie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You're going to stumble upon your world domination by accident through a candle vigil. My God. I think it's really great. I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure that you and I can grasp what defining characteristics this has as a horror without being of that time.
Right.
I think that we're too, you know, I mean, we've got, you know, people exploding. We've got like ripped apart chainsaws. We've got crazy ass shit. We've got movies about the Marquis de Sade, like whipping a girl into orgasm. Like, we're so separated from 1967 and seeing this movie that I don't even know if we could wrap our minds around what reaction people might have had to this.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there was another devil movie?
Right. I mean, I not until The Exorcist that I can think of.
Mm-mm.
I mean, which is only, what year was that?
Oh.
70. Early 70s?
Yeah.
74?
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Six years before someone was like, oh, shit, the devil thing really paid off.
Right. Well, and like a lot of babies being born at that time.
Yeah.
Either a couple of years before or a couple of years after. Like,
yeah.
You know, so I'm sure that it probably preyed on those fears for... It's probably a unique experience for a woman in 1967. You know, to see like who might like imagine being pregnant and going to see this movie. Like, oh shit.
Right.
Just as long as that doesn't happen.
Honey, let's take your mind off the stresses.
Yeah, right. Let's get
pregnant.
Yeah,
let's go out on Night on the Town.
Yeah, we'll go to the show, as they used to say.
Right.
Did your parents say that?
Go to the show?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But
we don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Right. And I think that the movie is really great. I think, okay, all sort of high drinks aside, Roman Polanski is a pretty talented director.
Yeah,
like
he is
at this time, and a lot of what was happening in the other films that are made. He's got some really nice use of some handheld
stuff.
How about
that peephole shot?
Yeah,
that was kind of weird to watch because I could immediately tell what was going on.
Yeah,
as we are looking through Ruth Gordon of the peephole, like. It's shaking. Like, you can tell he's just holding this washer right in front of the camera. But it works so well. I mean, was that, like, the first peephole shot ever?
Well, and he it could be. And he did do some daring things. Like, there is this scene. Oh, God, it just makes you, like, makes your fucking butthole clench when you watch it. But there's a scene where Mia Farrow walks into traffic.
Yes.
And they did not stop the traffic for that. They made no one aware of it. Roman Polanski just said, nobody's going to hit you. You're pregnant.
Oh my God.
Sent her out into moving cars with the camera on his shoulder, just said, go. And that was it.
That's hilarious because watching that scene, I was like, God, imagine being one of these guys and being like, I hope I don't accidentally hit Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
But they weren't even.
They were completely oblivious. Wow. She was just walking into New York downtown Manhattan traffic.
Now, there's something you couldn't do these days.
Yeah. The only thing Roman Polanski has ever done wrong. But no, I think he's, you know.
And when she kept. Because the neighbor's name is Roman.
Yeah.
But every time he said it, I was just like, why did she name her kid after this guy? And his name is Ronin.
Right.
Ronin.
Right.
And he's definitely not Frank Sinatra's kid. He is Woody Allen's kid. But it's weird. I looked it up. They, for some reason, don't really talk anymore. I don't know why. I have one more note here.
Yeah.
Oh, his sister is his mom now? Interesting. Okay.
Right. Now, now we don't have to go into all that. I will say.
I had to get a Woody Allen dig in.
I will say how that was presented to us, the SUNY Woody Allen thing when it first came out, is vastly different from the reality of that situation.
I'm sure.
So it doesn't make it good or any less weird at all. But it is different.
Like, conservatives who hate grooming and would be all up in arms if that happened today.
Well, the funny thing is when that was first pitched to us as a story, it was like, how can this, like, you used to bathe her as a young child and now that she's grown? No, never happened. They had a very strange marriage, Mia Farrow and Woody Allen. Never lived together.
Yeah.
Lived on opposite sides of the city. Even when she had Ronan, she's like, you know, I want to have a child. And he's like, okay, but do I have to do any parenting at all? Because
no,
I'm
Frank's
not going
coming
to.
Over.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Literally.
Although I did see someone say they're like, if Frank Sinatra knew he had a kid, he would not be like, that's not my kid.
I think he looks a lot like Marlon Brando, like a young Brando. I'm not the
that.
First one to say that. It's the lips. It's the eyes.
But he looks way more like Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah, right. So the thing is, though, I guess that, yeah, like he only met Sunyi when she was in like 11th grade.
So not that bad then.
Totally normal. Yeah, they only started dating when she was in college.
It's fine.
Right.
That's cool.
So very, yeah, people are, you know, Hollywood's weird.
Very weird.
Just
powerful people are weird.
Yeah. Has anyone ever called Woody Allen powerful before? I mean, I know he's got influence.
Of course,
but
yeah.
Powerful?
Well, that is...
What do you
think influence is? What do you think it gives you?
I'm just looking at the physical stature.
No, like, yeah. No,
you wouldn't say, look
no
at that powerful man
strong,
in the corner.
Yes, yeah. But you can... Tim, I know you love fighting, but power can equate to more than physical strength.
Yes.
I have the power to cut everything you say out of this episode.
No!
But you could kick my ass.
No, don't do it.
So, we'll see who's got the power.
But no, I think that
we don't want this episode to be 3 minutes long. I would never cut you out of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook. But... So, great movie. I loved watching it. I'm glad that I saw it. It's not a jump out and scare you. I don't even know if there's a jump scare in the whole damn thing.
I mean, no, not like a jump scare. No.
And there's no gore.
No.
There's no blood. Well, there is what's her name jumping out of the building and she's got an eye out.
Oh, yeah. She's got her face.
Yeah. She's got an eye out.
Yeah. That is the one part. They used it all for that.
Yes. But I mean, so I think it's really.
You mean Terry Gianofrio?
There you go. Perfectly stated. No, I think it's an entertaining movie. It's a little bit of a time capsule, but it's not like unwatchable like some older films are.
Yeah.
At over 2 hours, is it long? I think it's 2 hours and 16 minutes.
Yeah, it is.
It doesn't need to be that.
No, it feels very long.
It doesn't need to be that.
Which is odd because I just saw a 3 hour movie called Beau is Afraid. And,
oh, did you?
It was like a warm blanket. I could have sat there for 12 hours. A very stressful warm blanket.
You know, it's funny, the movies that I say that like I could sit there forever and watch. Like I remember saying that about Black Widow.
God.
Like, I don't know why. I just like, you know.
That's your first time back in a theater.
Yeah, right, that's
after
true.
2 years. Yeah. You're with your girls. You're like, this, I love this.
No, you know what? We actually went early because we saw when they were showing like older films, like we saw The Shining.
Oh, okay.
We saw...
I guess it was my first time back at the theater.
Yeah, your first time back. No, we had seen The Shining. We saw... God, what was it? A few other, like... I think I saw Nightmare on the big screen.
Okay.
Which is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, literally they would have, like, rows separating people.
Yes.
And it was awesome. But yeah, no, I think this is a great.
Mark this down. Tim said a part of the lockdown was awesome. Logged.
But I think
wish it happened again.
Right, never to happen again. But no, I think that this movie was really cool. I still, and shame on me for not knowing it. You know, prior to the recording, I still don't know if I know 100%. Why I like this movie so much,
right.
But there's something that is just neat about it.
Yeah.
It's partly like visually to look at it like these, a lot of, you know, muted pastels. It's very cute. It's very lively. People hadn't, you know, started just painting their fucking walls gray and putting in that gray ass dark gray fake wood flooring with black and white black backsplashes. Please stop that. It's handsome. It's handsome, but no more.
Right.
But no, there's color. There's pastels. There's this beautiful apartment that everybody's young. Mia Farrow is a fucking vision.
Yeah.
She's a goddamn vision in this movie. So cute. She does that little, like when girls don't have super long hair, but they still put in pigtails.
Mm-hmm.
Adorable. Yeah. It's a really, really pleasant movie to watch.
Yeah.
Just strange thing to say about Rosemary's Baby, but it's pleasant.
Do you recommend it?
Yes.
Okay. That I'm struggling with. I don't know. I think I would say I do recommend it, like watch it just on its historical merit. And it is a well-made film, but there is a lot of fucking baggage attached to this movie. So if you are maybe of a younger generation and are a little more sensitive to that kind of thing, I would say you could probably skip this one because, especially knowing the people who are involved in this movie and know what they do in this movie, it's kind of, you know, knowing the sum of everything, it's kind of hard to watch and not fun. Not fun to watch in places. But a lot of the filmmaking and a lot of the performances are incredible and are worth watching. So it's, you know, I would say if you are not triggered too easily,
mm-hmm,
as the parlance of our time, then yeah, I'd recommend it. But it's a very soft recommend. Because I also liked it, but I wasn't like, fuck yeah.
I could have gone the rest of my life without seeing it, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I could have. And, you know, I think it would have been really interesting. They really wanted Robert Redford for the role of Guy. I think that might have been interesting.
Yeah.
I think John Cassavetes does a fine job. But I, you know, kind of interesting there because he was a director himself. So there was a lot of clash there between
right.
he and Polanski. Cause it's like, well, I do this too. So,
right.
you know, but, But no, he does. He plays the part well. He's likable. He's but at the same time, he's likable and easily unlikable enough to where we don't feel betrayed.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to not like a Robert Redford.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it would be, especially if you know he's doing this to her, you'd be like, why Robert Redford? I'm like forgetting about Rosemary. I'm just like, what's Robert Redford's problem?
Yeah. Bank robber in South America. Fine. Give him a rustic mustache and that floppy black. There's a movie called Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Is that set in South America?
Yeah. Bolivia.
It is?
That's where they want to get to Bolivia.
Oh. Yeah. They want to get there.
Well, yeah, they get there.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, they do.
All right. That's one I saw on the AFI. I saw that in like 1999.
Oh, it's a great. My parents bugged the shit out of me to see Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And I'm like, that's just not my thing. Right. Like, you know, and then I watched it. They went out one night for dinner and I'm like, fuck, I'll just watch this goddamn movie. Absolutely loved it.
Wow.
Was like, felt like my heart got ripped out of my chest by the end of it. I just loved it.
Yeah. Isn't that great. Awesome when you just like don't really have many expectations for a movie and you watch it and it just absolutely floors you and might become your favorite movie of all time?
Like, yeah, but what like that is feeling. Out there? Guardians of the Galaxy?
You'll find out because your friends are obsessed.
Yeah.
Some of them not at all.
Well, I'll see it. Bo is afraid. This
afraid.
Episode
Bo's
brought to you by Bo is afraid.
2023. I would love to cover Bo is afraid because I don't, you know.
Well, we could.
Yeah, of course
it's labeled as a.
Because I'm not really worried about people being like, I'm going to see it, but I'm just waiting for the right moment. This feels like a movie like you're either going to see it or you're going to be like, I read about it. Sounds weird. No thanks.
Or what about we just get fucking hardcore and spoil a fucking movie?
Ooh.
Everybody is so afraid of spoilers. Why don't we just fucking do it?
Not with that one, though.
Okay.
Unless we cover it. Maybe in like a year.
Yeah.
If we're still doing this.
Yeah.
We'll doubtful.
We'll spoil a Guardians of the Galaxy 3 for
you. Oh, yeah. We're going to see Guardians of the Galaxy 3 tomorrow. We'll talk all about that.
Yeah.
During our next movie.
Ooh.
Which is, so this was Rosemary's Baby from 1968. Please join us next week as we continue Mame with the 2017 movie, another movie I saw in the theater alone that had a profound effect on me. Not as much as where I'd be like, this might be my new favorite movie. And a divisive movie for sure that audiences either loved or were like, what the fuck was that? And also a movie you loved, which I'm very excited to have you rewatch it because I'd be curious if you still love it. From 2017, it's Mother! ! Starring Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, Ed Harris, Michelle Pfeiffer. I think those are the only four like recognizable
people. Strong cast.
I feel strong movie. Darren Aronofsky? That's an Aronofsky, right?
Yes.
Right. So that'll give you an idea about how that's going to go.
I can't wait
for the ass to ass scene.
I just yeah, like every movie that doesn't have that is missing it.
Yeah, Ari Aster has missing heads. Darren Aronofsky has ass to ass. Like
yes.
It's just like a calling card.
Ari Aster is where we really need to just like
look at that.
Make the perfect film.
So good.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Now I'm just thinking about Bo. Like, do I go see Bo on my birthday alone at like 11 in the morning?
It seems like the movie for that.
I want to do that.
Should.
I would go every day. I would go every day. Okay. Yeah. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our LinkedIn page, the TikTok when I start that. I'm like, every day, I'm like, just go down. I've already got an idea of what I'm going to do for the first video. I'm like, just go do it. And then I don't do it. So I'm sorry. That's on me. You started the LinkedIn page, which is great.
Yeah.
We don't have a link to it anywhere. So I guess just search us and LinkedIn.
We are followed by the director of logistics for Noosa Yogurt.
Damn.
Yeah, there you go.
And I mentioned yogurt in this episode.
Australian
so
yogurt.
Hears it. Yeah. He's like, oh, they love our yogurt. huge thanks to our patrons. You help make this show possible. It could not be done without you, so thank you so much. Tim, do you have anything else to say about Rosemary's Baby?
Only this thing as an advice to a piece of advice to Satanists if you want to kind of fly under the radar a little bit, you need to change up that chanting cadence that you have. Because there, we get a little bit of satanic chanting in this. And you just need to get rid of the like, rah, 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 rah. Like, we're going to know you're Satanist right off the
bat. That's a key part, though. It doesn't work if you don't do that part.
Well, I mean, can we toss a little melody in
there? Do you think anyone's ever been chanting and they're like, a little too enthusiastic, please? Can you just do a little more monotone?
Yeah. Can we get some creepy kids in here to, like, do the same thing? No. But, Satanists, can't wait to hear from you.
Yeah, go see Bowels and Free. Bye.
Bye. Bye.